Okay, it's always a pleasure. Billy Lucci, Tex-Ags. What's up, buddy?
Look at me here and tell me, because I'm making sure I'm looking. Am I looking straight at the camera now? Yeah, that's great. That's perfect. Am I looking straight at the camera, Mike?
No, you're a little off. Yeah, right now you are. Perfect.
Okay, perfect. All right, good. Because I've got you in front of me, like right here, and I don't want to be doing this the whole time.
I got you.
Yeah, that looks way better, Kate. I like that.
Yeah, I love the background. I don't have the support staff to where I can change my background on a moment's notice, but you do.
Well, when I've come on, I've been like blending, and they don't know what color I'm going to wear when I come in, but it's just like every time, like it's either my hat blends into the black in the background or the maroon or my shirt. So I'm just like,
what are you guys on over there? Do you have Slack or something? Maybe you could do, you know, here's Billy's his get up for today. Here's what he's going to be wearing. The set should be appropriate.
We probably could. I mean, I'm sure he could, but I don't think I'm willing to subject myself to having to, you know, plan out what I wear.
I got you. Well, hey, were you wearing any Shamrocks when you went up to Notre Dame and A&M won? One of the best games of the year in college football. What can you give me the highlights from that trip?
Yeah, it was a blast. I mean, started out, got up to Chicago, did that whole thing, got to go see a few friends over at Barstool, including old Casey Smith, the old former Tex-Ags legend herself. So we had a good time there in Chicago, and then a ton of Aggies there. Made the trip on Saturday morning up to South Bend, and I had never been there, so the campus was beautiful, loved it. That lived up to the hype, and then in the rare instance, Mike, right, the game exceeded the hype, and then on top of that, Texas A&M won the game. So that combination, myself and any Aggie can tell you, you're not used to, whether it's Miami, whether it's Clemson, whether it was UCLA, whether it was Notre Dame 25 years ago. I could just go up and down the list. They've won some significant SEC road games in the last, 13 years. They had not won like one of those, hey, circle that one. We're going to go take a really fun road trip to watch Aggie football. They hadn't won one of those meaningful ones like that in a long time. So that was fun. And more importantly, you and I talked about it. Like, that was a massive opportunity for A&M, not just going into that game, but there as the game went on, right? You're sitting there going, they really need to win this one because it's there to be won, and they're playing well enough to win, but so was Notre Dame, and somebody had to suffer a devastating defeat. And because Marcel Reed found Nate Berkecher in the corner of that end zone or front corner of that end zone, it was A&M that was celebrating.
Yeah. And where would you rank that game, if you could, among wins that A&M has gotten since getting to the SEC? Because I know beating Nick Saban twice, those have got to be up there. Many teams never beat Saban once, yet they've done it twice. But I would say this Notre Dame win is up there.
In the moment, right? In the moment, because you don't know what it's going to mean. This might be the biggest, The Bama one, you kind of won a Heisman. You saw Johnny Manziel win a Heisman Trophy off of that, and it led to a top five finish, and it was the first year in the SEC, and it was really peak prime Bama. They went on to win the national title that year. And so that will always be, to me, like number one. It was so unexpected, and the man, with Johnny leading the way he did, that was magical. This might be, the other Bama win, that was a two-loss A&M team. I believe was 0-2 in the SEC. Maybe they were 1-2. It being at home and a walk-off field goal and the field storming, that was probably 2A, and to me, 2B. This is number two alongside that one for me. And this one carried, Mike, first of all, it was a classic game. And second, it being a last second play, it wasn't a chip shot field goal that they had positioned themselves for like most walk-offs are. It was literally, you complete this pass, you win. If you don't, they win. And two really good teams that went back and forth the whole game. Something about it being there right in front of Touchdown Jesus and in South Bend, the gold helmets. I would probably put that number two.
Yeah. Hey, I picked A&M to win that game, right? I think in the preseason, I picked them to go to the college football playoff. But in that moment, fourth and goal from what, the 11, what have you, game on the line, I'll be 100% honest. I did not think A&M was going to score there, given, you know, what had transpired the couple plays before. So, you know, putting that all together, Marcel Reed comes together, and it's, you know, one thing you could say as well, you know, his production is maybe largely based on these fantastic receivers he's got. Well, it wasn't even one of the receivers that made the play. So yeah. I say all that to ask you, Billy, has Marcel Reed arrived, do you think, as one of the best quarterbacks in the SEC, or does he still got some room to kind of prove that?
Compare him to who and who's proven what, right? That's where this league is so weird to me, because I think, and I might be forgetting somebody. I think the most proven guys might be Diego Pavia, honestly. Like, for what he's working with, for what he's brought. And then after that, I think it's, you know what, do we say it's Nussmeier because he put up big numbers last year? I was on him going into this season where I thought there are still some real questions about him based on some of the results in some meaningful games last year, namely A&M, Alabama, and really, if we're being honest, South Carolina. So now this week, everybody's looking at Ty Simpson's numbers, but the last time we saw him play someone that really mattered, you know, he couldn't lead his team past Florida State. I think he's really good. I think you should be paying attention to those numbers. I think he's stock rising. Is it Bo Prabula, who, I again, Missouri impresses the hell out of me offensively. I'm still going, yeah, I don't know when they play like formidable defenses, but I don't think South Carolina is one of them. Vandy proved that. So Kansas certainly isn't. I think all these guys, I could sit here and go down the list, including Marcel, still have a lot to prove. And I think for Marcel Reed, Saturday is going to be a really big game for him and the Aggies, because so many times in the past, A&M has not been able to follow up. And I'm not saying the very week after. I know that happened last year with LSU, then South Carolina. But historically, they've not been able to build on potential momentum changers, trajectory changers. And it's the same. Marcel's got an opportunity here. I think he's going against as good a defense, if not better, than the one at Notre Dame, which is weird to say because they were so great defensively last year. But certainly a better D coordinator in Durkin versus Ash. So this will be a tougher test, but it is at home. He does have those weapons. I don't think people have seen, like, if A&M, when they really get that ground game going, which I think they will, and I think people should have paid attention to the 20 for 81 and 3 touchdowns by Le'Veon Moss the other day, because that's the first game that they decided to feed him the football. And the production was almost on par there with Jeremiah Love, who's an All-American. So, Marcel, if he has a big game, Mike, against this Auburn defense, you'll be able to, a game after, compare it to what Mateer did. And I know everybody's saying, he had a broken hand. Well, the dude was, his hand was messed up enough that he completed 16 of 17 down the stretch and threw it well. Like, credit him for toughness, but he was certainly healthy enough to throw the football and play that game. Which, by the way, we'll talk about it in a minute, makes me wonder if they did surgery, they must think he'll be back for Red River. How he finished that game, you know, throwing it the way he did, which was very effective, and he threw it well. But anyway, you'll be able to compare A&M's offense to OU and Reed to Mateer, and go compare Reed on the road against Notre Dame versus Carson Beck at home against Notre Dame, and compare those numbers and statistics. I mean, if he wins Saturday, to answer your question, yes, I will think he's arrived. But just like all those guys in this conference, you got to prove it more than once. And I know Reed's had some other good games, and I think he's closer than a lot of the guys that people are hyping up. I do. And I told you this before the season. I thought he was being overlooked to a degree, but I didn't think, let's not thrust him up to the top. He's got to earn it. I'd say the same thing, Mike, about Gunnar Stockton right now. Can you go build on that finish against Tennessee? Because he might be the best one if he goes and shreds Alabama this week.
Right. Hey, I know you don't want to tip off Auburn or anything, but any chance A&M runs any illegal hideout plays here?
You know, A&M got victimized by that a couple of years ago. If you go look it up, I think it was the last time. I think it was Jimbo's last season in Oxford. I'm 99%. Yeah, I think it was, I know they did it. It was that game. It was Jackson Dart. I don't know who it was to. I hope to God it wasn't Trey Harris because he's the best player on the field that day. But they did the same thing for either a big play or a touchdown. They did the same exact thing where the guy was hiding out by the sideline. So Lane Kiffin, Oklahoma football. And neither one of them surprised me if they find ways to dance around the rules. And I mean, I'm not a throw my hands up and cry about it. I thought the other play with Satania, they had just as big a gripe. Personally, I thought that should have been a catch. And I know they said that was a correct call, but you know, Mike, with catches, we should just let these officials, like, sit them all in a room and say, hey, I'm assuming you all played football as a little kid. Just, A, if the ball touches the ground at any point, just call it a drop. I don't care. Like, finishing the play, yada, yada. If the ball touches the ground, it's not a completion. Just make it simple. Okay, that's harder to make it. I don't care. Touches the ground, it's incomplete. The second thing, just forget about it and just have common sense that a 7-year-old and 8, 10-year-olds have playing tackle football in the street or out in the grass. Like, did he catch it or not? Like, we're trying too hard with these super slow-mo replay. To me, that was a catch and a fumble and a return for a touchdown by Auburn.
Yeah, it's hard to feel bad for Hugh Freeze about anything, but I felt bad for him after that one.
Yeah. They should have won that game.
So you kind of hinted at this, but I've always heard it in this conference. They say, yeah, you win a big game. All that really does is make the next game even bigger. So what's the pressure like to keep this momentum going? Because A&M's not, they're not quite shed the 8-4 label, which I know you've made the point many times. Hell, they don't even go 8-4 that many times. I don't know why that's the label, but you know, if they drop it to Auburn, that's what everybody's going to be saying. Oh God, they're just going to go 8-4 again. How much pressure is on it on A&M to win this game?
I think. Well, I'm trying to think of how. Like, to me, there's such an opportunity in front of A&M right now. And again, like, I go back to this 8-4 thing. Mike Elko going 8-4 in his first year at A&M was better than 14 of the 16 SEC coaches did in their first year at their current school. So that was a good 8-4, even though it didn't end good. And the reason it didn't end good is the team that's coming in here this weekend, Auburn. They handed you that triple overtime loss that it kept A&M out of Atlanta. It did. Had they won that game, they would have been in even with that Texas loss. But B, it was the one that stood out as a bad loss to Peyton Thorne and that team, because South Carolina was rolling and that was in Columbia and everyone knew it was dangerous. Texas was, you know, finished in the top five. They were a national title contender. That was the one that stood out and kind of made it like a bad stretch of the season. So I think there's a little payback you want, but more importantly, Mike, with that Notre Dame win, you have now set up a situation where you get three straight home games and then you go to Fayetteville. Now, nothing's easy in the SEC. I think this game's a toss-up. I like the home team at A&M in this one. If it was on the road, maybe I'd change my tune. I like A&M to defend the home field. But you're playing four straight unranked teams to open SEC play. That I don't care, like, I know Arkansas could be 4-0. I know Auburn should have beaten Oklahoma, and they put it to Baylor. they're not easy games, but I'm saying you don't typically start SEC play halfway through your conference schedule without playing a ranked team. So, and three of them are at home. It's a great opportunity. You know, Auburn played an emotional, frustrating game, physical game last week when you were off. Mississippi State's got to come in here a week after they play a really good Tennessee team. Florida's coming in after Miami, Texas, South Florida, and LSU. Who knows who's coming in there with them at this point? And then you go to Arkansas. Here's my prediction for that one. You ready for this? Because you're going to like it. They lose what I think is going to be a wild kind of shootout against Notre Dame this weekend, actually, in Fayetteville. Then they decide what they're going to do behind closed doors. Then they go to Tennessee, and you don't want an interim coach's first game to be, you know, at Neyland Stadium against that team. So that's Sam Pittman. And then comes the announcement. And then Texas A&M goes to Fayetteville at night. Bobby Petrino's first game back since the motorcycle incident against the team he last coached at. That's the only way to get crowd excitement, create an absolute sellout circus there in Fayetteville. If you can't see this coming from a mile away, you're either crazy or you think they're going to beat Notre Dame. So one of the two, but is the only way you're not looking at this going, this is exactly. So my point of saying all that is nothing's going to be easy, but again, you're going through the first half of conference play with three of the four games at home, including three in a row against teams that to various degrees are probably going to be coming in, you know, in some sort of struggle and are unranked. So, and the toughest one to me is Auburn to start it off. So I think they're actually a legitimately good team under Freeze and dangerous. So this is a tough test for the Aggies.
Billy, I don't know if you've ever been to a game up in Oregon, but they have the mascot come out, leads the team out. He rides a motorcycle. We get Bobby Petrino to do it down there. Buddy, that place is going to explode, don't you think?
Could you imagine? And I would say just put the sidecar there with like with that hog they've got. Just do it and just say, hey, if something goes awry, so be it. But this is what it's gonna take.
Put Jerry Jones in that sidecar.
Seriously, I mean, that's gonna be if you're sitting there as an Aggie thinking, man, they're gonna be riding a 4-game losing streak and done. And no fan excitement. If they don't do what I think we all now realize is very likely to happen.
Hey, let me ask you another thing about Auburn, though, because they're pretty good at running the football, and A&M has struggled a little bit with that. How key will that be for this matchup to at least limit Auburn on the ground?
Well, look, I thought they did a pretty good job against Notre Dame. If you really rewatch it, break down the number, you know, to hold Love to 93-94 yards on 23 carries. I know he had the wheel route for a touchdown where they forgot to cover him, but they did a pretty good job. You know, they stopped 2 4th-and-1s. They stopped a 3rd-and-1 for like a 5-yard loss. I think they had 8 tackles for loss. Only 2 of those were sacks. So they had 6 run plays that they stuffed for loss. So I thought they did a better job against the run against Notre Dame than they did against UTSA or Utah State. Like I saw significant improvement there. It's going to have to stay that way because A&M won't win the football game if Auburn can run and set up big passes to Cam Coleman and even Singleton and those guys. But, you know, because then comes the play action and then Jackson Arnold gets that extra time that he clearly needs. If he doesn't have that extra time, he's probably not getting rid of the football and is getting sacked. So I think for A&M, it's going to be Mike tackling as much as anything. So when they try to get it out of his hands and make quick throws to adjust to what happened this past weekend, you got to close and tackle guys like Coleman and Singleton before they turn a quick catch into 7, 8, 10 yards. And then beyond that, look, they gave up big plays through the air to Notre Dame. They got killed early in that football game against Auburn last year through the air, you know, to go down 21-0. South Carolina threw it on them a lot. They've got to show this improvement in the secondary that we assumed we would see this year. It was hidden in those first two games. It was just tough to tell because those teams weren't really going to get you through the air like, you know, like other SEC teams can. The first test they got, there were some busts. There were some open receivers. So that's my primary concern in that one. And look, if that does happen, then maybe A&M still, you know, plays in a shootout and wins it like they did last weekend. And like the game they lost at Auburn last year. So who knows? So I think they can hold up either way, but their path to winning, to me, starts with stopping the run and running the football. You know, get Moss going again. I think the country's sleeping on him a little bit because of the injury last year, and they deliberately gave him a slow start this year.
How confident are you A&M makes the college football playoff if they win on Saturday against Auburn?
I said before the season that September, if they got out of September, right? What did you pick them to go? I picked 9-3. I think we both did. Okay, I picked 9-3, and I said if they beat Notre Dame and Auburn, people asked if I changed my prediction after Notre Dame. It was no. I did then because I'm picking them to win this weekend. I said, if they win this weekend, I think they're a 10-win team that it's hard to see a 10-win being left out. So,
right. Yeah, no, that's exactly what I think is going to happen. I think that Notre Dame win was that big, and this Auburn one could be equally as big.
Well, let me put it to you this way. I think Texas A&M is a lot better football team this year than they were last year. As we prepare to see them play Auburn, had they tackled Peyton Thorne on 4th-and-3 and QB draw or whatever it was, had they made that tackle, there are 10 other plays in that game, but had they made that tackle, they'd have finished 9-3 last year with a loss to Notre Dame. So you beat Notre Dame now, and had you beat them last year and made that tackle, that's 10 wins. So I think if they can beat Notre Dame and Auburn, you look at the rest of the schedule, and I could see it playing out pretty similarly where those last like five really glaring games, you go, can you go 3-2 in those five?
Mm-hmm. All right, how's Aggieland? Are they happy with the three annual opponents that A&M got from the SEC?
Look, you know this. Missouri fans can get very I don't know what the deal is with some of them. Like, here I am. Like, who'd I thought that I'm going to piss off Missouri? Nothing I'm going to say is insulting to Missouri. I get that I'll be insulting to Texas, even though you and I were exactly right. Everything we said about them this offseason, which, by the way, wasn't insulting. It was just honest, and that, hey, they just won't be quite what they were last year, and Arch is going to have a learning curve and replacing the O-line, but they took serious offense to that and just, you know, tried to make us both look like fools. But Missouri fans, this is not a shot. This is not a negative. I just don't think A&M fans, there's nothing there other than that they both were in the Big 12 and they both came into the league at the same time. Look, I think everybody's got one rivalry game or annual game that they're kind of like, eh. And by the way, Missouri's probably like that about A&M. Other than the fact that they get to come to this stadium, which is pretty damn nice, it's a pretty cool environment, if I do say so myself. But other than that, like, Missouri's probably like, oh, A&M, we've been playing them since the Big 12 days. I get it, and we're just not – there's not, like, a lot of hate there. There's not a historic – rivalry. A lot of the games, it's been Missouri's been good and A&M's been down, or A&M's been good and Missouri's been down. It's never really coincided over like a 3-4 game stretch. So just doesn't do much, whatever. I love LSU being one, and I love Texas being one. And let me tell you something about LSU. First of all, I'm pissed that the Aggies have to go to Baton Rouge 2 years in a row. The home team's won the last seven in that series. So T-Bob and that crew can celebrate that. But LSU can act like it's not a rivalry, yada, yada. I would say, who is your rivalry? You're crying about Florida. That's just because you guys were both really good for much of that time at this, kind of like I said about Mizzou, like Florida and LSU, you know, in the last, what, 25 years have been both kind of top 10 programs. You know, Florida's kind of drifting out. LSU's kind of on the back end of that top 10 lately, with the exception of 19. But like, LSU should, I, in my opinion, embrace this rivalry thing with A&M. There's so many Tiger fans and alum in Houston and throughout Texas. There's so many Aggies in Louisiana. They had a long history of playing a lot when A&M was in the Southwest Conference, and even into, I think even in, no, not even into the Big 12, other than a bowl game. But, and then they've played every year, you know, since the SEC. So there's history in baseball. There's history with shared ADs and defensive coordinators and coaches and things like that. So, yeah, you know, I mean, hell, Max Johnson, you know, threw a touchdown pass to beat A&M 1 year, and the next year was at A&M beating LSU, you know. So I think, did he win that one? I don't remember now. But, yeah, so there's a lot of commonality there. It's a rivalry. It's a rivalry as much as most anything else they had. I know Bama's a rival for him. Well, why is Bama a rival?
Nick Saban.
Because you were both great in 2019 and Nick Saban versus Les Miles. Yeah, Nick Saban. So just embrace it a little more. Missouri, we don't care about them. They don't care about us. But I do think this will be one of those games this year. I do think Missouri's got a hell of a team. I think Drink's a hell of a coach. That will be a game this year that doesn't have to be a rivalry. I think that one's going to be a super meaningful game in Como next month.
Yeah, I just hope for your sake and the rest of the Aggies out there that whenever A&M plays up there, it's not late November. It might as well be Siberia up there. It's pretty rough.
Sure. It is actually going to be what? It's it'll be the second week in November. It will. Yeah, so that'd be an interesting one. Right? Am I wrong? It goes Arkansas, mm-hmm. LSU, bye week Missouri.
Yeah, November 8th.
Yep. So hopefully not Siberia.
Final thing for you, Billy. Really, really appreciate your time. Arch Manning flexed on old Sam Houston. I'd literally never heard of that school till last week. Is Arch Manning back? Is he going to win the Heisman?
If you listen to people on Twitter, yes. Yes and yes are your answers. Mike, here's the thing, man. I have no problem with him flexing on the Sam Houston guy. Apparently the guy was yapping the whole game. And I don't even care if he wasn't. Like, it's football. It's an alpha sport. And by the way, though, the only thing is he didn't run the guy over. He just kind of ran through a tackle. It's not like he smoked him. But if you're playing fired up, I saw some of his antics in that game. Look, it's a young guy trying to get his mojo back and have fun playing while he's struggling. Like, I can appreciate that, and I can respect that, and I'm all for a competitor. It's like a guy that's not shooting good for five games in a row, and you play a smaller school, like what do we call them in basketball? Mid-major at home in December, and you hit six threes and you hadn't hit one in your last three games, and you're going to over celebrate and you're like, good, I got my shot back. I'm fine with that. It's the fans' reaction, and the Texas social media account was doing it like several days later, like all these posts about and Aura, they're calling him Aura Manning, and Arch got his swagger back, and they're comparing his stats now to Eli and Peyton through so many games, and they're comparing his stats straight up to Mateers. And it's like, guys, like, his stats are padded because he just did it against one of the worst teams in FCS. They're bringing up Johnny running over a guy and talking smack. Johnny had won the Heisman. Sam Houston was like a national title contender every year in the FCS at that time. I think they even won one. And again, no one's, I'm not anyway, complaining about him running the guy over and lording over him. I actually like it. Like, yeah, tackle me next time if you don't want me to do that. But it's their reaction. So now they're comparing his numbers to Mateer. It's so intellectually dishonest when you know how he played against Ohio State and you know how he played against Sam Houston and in between San Jose and UTEP. Let's just be normal and just say, hey, the guy wouldn't have hit those passes the last 2 weeks against lesser teams. He did it this week. He's getting his confidence up. We needed that going into SEC play. I feel good about it. I feel better about where Arch is at. But they can't just do that. It can't just be that. And it's the same people, Mike, right, that will rip me, you, or Jordan Rogers, who's anyone that was even remotely critical about Arch apart, even though they would not hear the part where we all said he's going to be really good. They chose to not listen to that. You guys propped him up, including national media, who are now like, oh, it's just too much on him. They've put too many expectations. You guys did that. Their fans, their media, national media. Then they said, well, they put him through. And then he has one good game against a terrible team in that same cast of characters. They come running back out to thrust him back up, you know, on the mountaintop again. And I'm the one saying, I don't think that's fair to him. Let the guy enjoy a good game. Don't overpromote it. Let him go in the swamp and do it against a quality Florida defense. And then let him go into Red River against a great OU defense. And let's see if he can build up and accomplish those. And if he does, then he's changed the narrative, and I think rightfully so. Not after what we saw this weekend. I don't think that, frankly, again, I got no problem with him showing the emotion he did and you know, really kind of just cutting loose and letting out some frustration on a bad team. I think every team, there's a point in every team and player's development where you want to do that and you need that kind of game. It's everyone else. And you're the ones telling us what we're doing wrong. It's you. Quit propping him up unnecessarily. Let him develop as a young SEC quarterback. That's it. Same way you would do Marcel Reed. Same way you will do, you know, they did with Nussmeier. Same way you would do with Gunnar Stockton right now and Ty Simpson. Just let Jackson Dart went through the process. We could go on and on. Let him develop like all SEC quarterbacks do, where it's kind of a learning curve as they go.
Yeah, and they'll probably miss, I know you noted this, they'll miss DJ Lagway, he's banged up. They'll probably miss John Mateer, and then they'll get to gloat about how this SEC grind is nothing. You know what?
Mike, don't do it. I'm not even gonna, they might play Lagway. I think they at least were pretending he returned to practice. I think he did. Yeah. I think it's a pinky toe. I've got a suspicion on Mateer. I'm still like, I'm not, you know, obviously I'm not a doctor, but he finished that game. And I know there's like next day swelling and stuff like that, but he finished that game. He was throwing darts. And then they decide to do a real quick surgery when they've got a, you know, Kent State and a bye week before they play Texas. So part of me is going, why? There's a little bit of me that thinks maybe they think he'll be back for Texas. So we'll see. But yeah, if they miss Lagway in Texas, they're having some fun with math on some of the starting quarterbacks they missed last year too. It has been teed up. The good news is if you look at these new schedules, not just Texas, but nobody, but at least Texas is about to find out. Like next year, I think they go to Kyle Field, to Knoxville, to Baton Rouge, somewhere else. Like they've got a tough road next. Oh, and they play Ohio State at home. And then the following season, I think it's Michigan. And then they play, I think in the same year, they play Michigan, Bama and Georgia just at the top. So it's all you know, it's all going to even out, not just for Texas, though, but for everybody. So anyone complaining about the schedule, it's like you're going to play five SEC road games every other year. You're going to play nine every year. Well, I like what Paul said. The college football playoff committee better have their shit together. And I don't think he said that, but I'm paraphrasing. Better have their shit together and do what they kind of said in terms of the metrics on how they're going to gauge strength of schedule and resume moving forward, because 9-3 is the 9-3 is the new 10-2. You go 9-3, you should be getting into this college football playoff in this conference.
Yeah, no doubt. Billy, really appreciate you. Before you go, can you tell my audience how to follow you and how to check out everything you got going on at TexAggs?
Yeah, just TexAggs. It's just TexAggs.com, and we're TexAggs on all social media, at TexAggs, and then at Billy Lucci, L-I-U-C-C-I, and that's my Twitter, Instagram, if you want to see some fun Chicago and Yellowstone, Jackson Hole pictures, you know, my little... I don't do a whole lot of work on there. That's just my fun. But yeah, at Billy Lucci on all the social media platforms.
Yeah, nice little humble brag as you go out the door. Appreciate you, Billy. Have a good one, man.
All right, buddy. See you.